The last thing I wanted to do on my summer break was blow up another school.
Welcome to Floor 600. This is the podcast where two friends, Quinn
and Natalie,
read Percy Jackson and the Olympian series by Rick Riordan. We are now starting The Battle of the Labyrinth, the fourth book in the series. In this episode, we read chapters 1 through 3.
Yes. Whoa. Because they were really long.
They were.
All right. So we, as you know, have an email address where you guys can send us stuff. And sometimes people do. And it makes us really happy. And that email address is, write this down, floor, that's F-L-O-O-R, 600 dot, like, period.
Wait, how do you compose 600?
600.
I was thinking 600.
But that's just 6 followed by 2 O's. You gotta put the 00 period podcast, that's podcast at, like the little at thing, gmail.com. All of that lowercase.
M-A-L-E, right?
No. Gmail, like the mail you get in your mailbox.
Yeah, that's M-A-L-E.
Back in the day.
M-A-L-E.
No, that's M-A-I-L.
Oh, so it's G-M-A-I-A-L-L.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Floor600.podcast@gmail.com, okay?
Okay.
And speaking of our email address, it has an inbox.
It does?
Yeah, and in our inbox is another email from Valeria, who wrote us back.
Hi!
So last time, Valeria wrote us about the Camp Half-Blood orientation film and what makes it PG-13. Mm-hmm. And she told us the answers in Camp Half-Blood Confidential. So we said to please write us if there's major spoilers in it. So she said, hey, it's me again. I can't believe that you read my email on the podcast. I felt famous. Girl, we feel famous.
By you saying that you feel famous, we feel famous. It's just a fame circle.
I feel famous whenever we get an email and it's not from Chartable or Patreon.
Or what, cute Quoria?
We need to change our emails to base on that. She says, if I'm not mistaken, Camp Half-Blood Confidential fits between Blood of Olympus and the Hidden Oracle. It doesn't have, like, major spoilers, but it does have characters and references to situations that happened in Heroes of Olympus.
Okay, so we'll have to read that after Heroes of Olympus. Or, you know what? I could read it now and then, like, yeah. I might just read it now and never talk to anybody about it.
The Hidden Oracle is a Trials of Apollo book.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so which after one is Blood of Olympus? Oh, that's a Heroes book. No, yep. That's... Wait, what? Is it?
Yeah, it's a Heroes of Olympus book.
There's so many!
So many books. So many books!
Okay, so we need to read that between Heroes and Apollo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Things.
All right, good to know.
All right.
Especially as we are approaching the end of the original series.
I know, it's kind of scary.
And we're going to have to plan what we're reading next.
I think we should just keep on with the... I think we should go to Heroes of Olympus. But if you guys have a preference of what series that we should start next, come on. That email's there for a reason.
Yeah, but I don't know, man. We're going to have to figure that out, and we could use your input. So... let us know what you think in the comments / emails.
Yeah. Okay. So, are you ready? Are you ready? Are ready? Are we ready to start? Are we ready to start the book? Are we studying the book? Are we starting it? Now?
Yes.
Now?
Now.
Now.
As soon as you stop talking.
Oh, okay.
So we can get into the Riordan reader recap.
Ooh, nice alliteration.
I love me some alliteration. So, the first chapter, chapter one of this beautiful book, this fourth installment in this lovely series, is called I Battle the Cheerleading Squad.
I gave that 4 stars.
Me too.
Cool. That was a weird, awkward fist pump.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
So we're starting out. And Percy is going to a new school. He's going to school orientation. And guess what? He's going to high school. Percy's growing up. He's going to high school now.
Yeah, because Queen Sally has managed to find Percy another new school.
Yeah, talented.
Dangerous. Yeah, today's orientation, and it's several months early, so everybody's like, why are we here? It's like the beginning of summer.
I don't think I ever had orientation. Like, well, first of all, I don't know if we, did our high school even have orientation? I know that there was a thing that, like, it was like a week before classes. You're like, come to the school and you'll learn where the classes are. But we didn't have, like, any kind of. Yeah, but
we had that for, like, every new year.
Yeah, exactly.
Because every new year we were in a different, like, class location.
Rooms? Yeah.
In the same school. So it's like, come find your stuff. By senior year, I think you got it figured out.
Yeah.
But yeah, side note, Sally is dressed for an interview.
Yeah!
So she's leaving the candy shop.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably good because I honestly don't know how she supported him on candy shop.
Money.
Salary.
Yeah. Salary. Sally. But, and also, her and Paul's relationship has definitely, I think.
Blossoming.
It's blossoming.
Because Percy is going to good high school this year.
Oh.
And this is a school where Mr. Blowfish teaches English.
Blowfish! God, stop calling him Mr. Blowfish. Percy doesn't call him Mr. Blowfish.
Yes, he does.
Nuh-uh. Not anymore.
I'll do what I want. And Sally asks Percy to remember that this is Paul's school and to please try not to destroy it.
Just try a little bit.
Yeah. Percy's not thrilled about the, you know, going back to school thing, given his track record. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of like, ugh, what can go wrong this time?
A lot.
But Queen Sally reminds him that A, Percy is heading off to camp tomorrow, huzzah, and B, Annabeth is coming to New York City to meet Percy for a movie night.
And C, I don't know, I just thought something.
So Percy is like talking to Queen Sally and he doesn't want to go in and she's like, all right, kid, go to school, you know. And Percy is going into the school, and he sees Rachel Dare.
Rachel Elizabeth Dare?
Yeah.
From the Hoover Dam incident?
Yep.
Damn.
And he's like, oh no, I don't want to talk to her. So he goes into the side door to try to avoid her. I'm like, why is that door even unlocked?
I know. This is a school orientation. I feel like you would be like, unlock the front door and not the other ones so you know who's in the school.
Yeah. So there, he meets two cheerleaders, Kelly and Tammy, who are fending off freshmen who didn't go in the front door. And they're very strange.
They're very intense.
And they're just, like, talking to Percy, and he's like, okay.
And they call him Fish, which I get. Then, like, it's freshman Fish. I don't know. Is that real? Does that happen in real schools where they call them Fish?
I don't know.
I've heard it in
our school.
Things.
Nobody cared about the freshmen.
I know.
They just ignored us.
Yeah.
I know that I did my best to ignore the freshmen.
I know. It was just a thing. You don't look at the freshmen. Avoid their gaze.
Yeah. Just pretty awful. You probably shouldn't do that. But anyway, Percy's like, all right, I gotta go. Goodbye, weird ladies. And he accidentally knees Kelly in the leg as he's walking past her, and it makes like a hollow ringing sound.
Weird.
And he's like, the heck?
Maybe she's wearing some steel-toed boots.
On her knee?
Yeah. They're like knee highs. Knee highs.
Okay. And so Paul finds Percy, and he's like, Percy, what are you doing over here, weirdo? Then going to the gym, and they're, like, having a school assembly in the gym. Yay. I hated school assemblies.
Yeah, they were fun.
Spirit day. Gag. And so Percy can't help but run into Rachel there. And he's like, what are you doing here? I didn't know you lived in New York. And she's like, what, you thought I lived at the Hoover Dam?
Well, or at least somewhere nearby, yeah.
It's, like, a gigantic country. She could have lived anywhere.
Yeah. She could be from Canada.
Yeah, literally. The fact that she happens to be at Percy's school is, like, super manufactured and kind of irritates me.
Yeah, it's, like, it's literally a one in a billion chance.
Yeah.
It's a very small
probably
chance.
Probably like 1 in like 4 billion.
Someone could probably do that math and figure out what the chances are. Even
that
if they...
That person is not me.
No.
But yeah, so she's there, he's there, woohoo. So Rachel, who, you know, she was able to see the owl. the skeletons at the Hoover Dam for what they really were. And in the same way, she can see that Kelly and Tammy are not regular cheerleaders. And she's like, Percy, run. And he's like, I can't run. Like, it'll look weird if I leave now. And she's like, come on, follow me. So Percy follows Rachel out of the gym because he just has this, like, he always trusts what she says implicitly, like, without really questioning.
He does that with a lot of people.
Except for something we will shall see in a little bit. But yeah.
I am, like, drawing blank at what you're alluding at, but okay.
Yeah, so he does kind of do that a lot.
I don't know, like...
He's a trusting person. I think he trusts people his own age.
Mm-hmm. Like, who else? He does that... He had followed Grover implicitly, but they were friends for a while.
Yeah, they were already friends. That doesn't count.
Chiron. Why does he listen to that fool? God.
Yeah, he does listen to Chiron.
God. No one should listen to Chiron.
Chiron has his ups and downs.
Chiron is an immortal, so, like, I don't know. He doesn't... I don't know. He's not connected with the, like, whole world.
Yeah. So they hide in the band room behind a drum, and Rachel's like, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah, she was like, she saw Tammy and Kelly for what they were, and she was like really concerned, and she was like, we not needs to get out.
Yeah.
And so now they're in like a safe hiding spot, and Percy's like, cool, now why are we hiding? And she's just like, so what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, wait, go to back to the immediate problem.
Oh, hand. Why are we hiding?
Why are we hiding?
So... She's like, well, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. And Percy's like, oh, trust me, I would. You can see through the mist. And she's like, well, what's the mist? So
it's like, stop getting sidetracked and tell me what you saw.
Yeah. So basically, Percy gives her a very quick lowdown on the mist, the Olympians, the monsters, and half-bloods. And
yeah.
It's weird because she's like, well, you're not human. And it's like, whoa. It's weird because like he's really not.
Yeah.
But it's weird to think about it like that. I mean, mm-hmm. He's half human.
Yeah. Half what? Isn't that what she asked? She's like, half human. Half what?
Yeah.
And she's like, God, no big deal.
It is, but they don't really get that far into it. Because Kelly and Tammy find them. And start trying to murder Percy.
Oh, dear.
Because they are in Pusai.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think we'll find out more about and bring on the monsters.
We will. But so we get their description, right?
Mm-hmm. Below the cheerleader's skirt, her left leg was brown and shaggy with a donkey's hoof. Her right leg was shaped like a human leg, but it was made of bronze. She's as white as chalk. Her eyes are completely red. She has fangs. she's just a psychotic-looking monster.
Yeah.
Um.
And I love that, so, like, Tammy and Kelly, like, so it's Kelly is the head Impusai. Impusa?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Tammy is sort of the trainee.
Yeah.
and Kelly's actually pretty, like, no, go ahead. Try.
She's a good trainer.
She is.
Yeah.
It makes sense why she's leading the orientation.
Yeah, so they're, like, entrancing Percy, and he's, like, he manages to destroy Tammy, but can't really get at Kelly. And if it weren't for Rachel, Percy would die.
Yeah.
Because Rachel is, like, the only level-headed one right now, and she, like, throws a snare drum at him and stuff. but Kelly is, like, talking about camp being up in flames.
Yeah, and she says, you don't know what's happening, do you? Soon your pretty little camp in flames, your friends made slaves to the Lord of Time, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. That reminds me a little bit of Lord of the Rings.
Why?
In the Fellowship of the Ring, when they go to the Galadriel and all of those elves. And she sees, like, the water basin future type thing. She sees his future, and it's like, oh, well, you could be, like, oh, you're the Shire in flames. Your friend's enslaved. Blah, 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 blah. Everyone dead.
Yeah, because in case you didn't have enough of a sense of impending doom, Galadriel has to go all misty-eyed and tell us that the world will explode in flames.
And then he's all like, hey, but you could take the ring. And she gets all, like, really angry, glowy, and she's like, blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's super stupid.
Yeah.
And unnecessary. But, yeah, sure, except Galadriel is, like, not trying to murder them.
Is she, though? She gets all scary.
Power corrupts people, dude. That doesn't mean she wants to kill them. Anyway, ooh, back to this story. That's a whole different podcast. Hey, that would be fun.
Ooh.
We'd have to actually read the books.
I've read the books.
I know. Kelly is creepy. Tammy is dead. And Kelly like lures Percy toward the band room door. And she's like crying out for help. Like she's the victim here, right?
Yeah, she plays this well.
Yeah, she's done this before.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, oh, Percy, don't help me. So she, like, blows the door open, and Paul is there with his tour.
Yeah, just a perfect timing to see her running out and him coming out with a sword.
Something that probably looks like a broken music stand or something.
Ooh, maybe the end of a trombone.
Yeah.
Ha! Thing.
Yeah, something like that. And she's like, don't, Percy, Paul, or, you know, Mr. Blofus, help me. And then,
that'd be weird if she called him Paul.
Yeah. And then she explodes in the flames.
How'd Percy do that in his mind?
Yeah. So she, like, sets the school on fire.
Yeah.
And Paul's just staring at Percy in shock. He's like, what have you done?
And Percy's like, sorry, and just, like, sprints out the broken band door window.
Yeah.
He just jumps out the window. And Paul's like, what happened?
Who? Poor Paul.
What? Where? Fire!
Children, safety, danger. Because
my girlfriend's son just jumped out the window.
And ran after he set the school on fire. But what does he think happens to Kelly, you know? Does she just, like, burn up?
Yeah. I think in Percy's mind, she just magically died. And that sort of
in
dumb
Paul's mind, you mean?
Oh, in Paul's mind, yes.
Yeah.
Also in Percy's mind, I think Percy thinks, "Oh, I've defeated this monster."
No, I
but
think
it's like
that
she did it on purpose.
I think that he knows that she did it on purpose, because he like questions it. Yeah, because later he's talking to Chiron. He's like, "What happened?"
Oh,
and
yeah.
And Chiron's like, "Well, some of the more powerful creatures can do that."
Mm-hmm.
Percy's like, "Oh, awesome."
Well, that would have been nice to know.
Yeah. So, Percy, yeah, he climbs out the band room window, he's running down the alley, and he runs directly into Annabeth Chase.
Aww. And I love it, so it's like Annabeth, like, oh, blah, 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 blah. For a split second, she was in a good mood, and everything was fine. She was wearing jeans and an orange camp t-shirt, and her clay bead necklace. Her blonde hair was pulled back in a ponytail, her gray eyes sparkled, she looked like she was ready to catch a movie or have a cool afternoon hanging out together. Then
Rachel runs
Elizabeth
up.
Elizabeth Dare, covered in monster dust, shows up.
And Annabeth immediately goes from warm, Percy, hey, friend, cool, to who is that?
Who is this? Oh, she's immortal. Oh, you told her about us. Oh, she gave you her number?
Annabeth ain't happy about this.
No.
And Percy introduces Rachel to Annabeth as my friend. He is like, well, she saved my life twice. I can't really call her nothing, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know if friend is really accurate either. But Rachel writes her number on Percy's hand with a permanent marker and demands that he call her and explain more about what is going on. So, Annabeth...
And if Annabeth was thinking that they were going on a movie date, she'd be pissed.
Yeah.
She'd be pissed that, yeah. Oh... Not only we were going on a date, now we have to not go on this date, and some other girl gave you her number.
Yeah. And Percy told this girl about the Olympians.
Yeah.
Poor Annabeth is not.
Annabeth is sort of just like, okay, I was just getting to think maybe I like you, and now, nope. Back down.
I was wrong. So, yeah, they did have to call off the movie because The police are looking for Percy. There's obviously something big going on, and they have to get to camp ASAP.
Yeah.
But given that we know, like what we learn later, it's so funny that they decide that, because Annabeth knows more about what's going on at camp than Percy does at this point.
Yeah, and Annabeth just refuses to talk to him at all.
Yeah, well, at this moment, she's like, oh, it's fine if we can go to the movies and stuff. We don't have to get back to camp and help Grover and, like...
But then it does seem, like, in chapter two, like, when they get to Grover, it's sort of like, yeah, they have to get there really quick, and they have to move quickly to get all, or, like, do the things that they needs to be done.
Yeah.
So even if they had gotten to done that movie, that would have been dumb on Annabeth's part. Like,
well, Percy is going to camp tomorrow morning.
Yeah, he would have missed all of that information. Yeah. I blame Chiron.
They probably shouldn't have been going to the movie anyway.
Shouldn't have been going to the movie. Should not have been part of the plan. Anyway, chapter two.
The underworld sends me a prank call.
I gave that, I don't know how many stars. 3 stars.
I gave it 4.
Ooh, okay.
Because it's the underworld, it's a prank call. Nico reference. Is what it makes me think of. And it's just, it's a great title.
Okay, I could give more. I just, like, I'm bored. I don't know. Prank calls bore me.
Yeah, but if you're 15, they're funny.
Are they?
Sometimes. So Annabeth is, capital, not happy. The whole ride to Camp Half-Blood, which is pretty long and expensive in a taxi.
Yeah, I would think so.
So there's no news on Luke or Nico D'Angelo. Grover's in some sort of situation.
Situation?
And Percy calls Queen Sally on Annabeth's cell phone to let her know that he's all right and headed to camp early, which is a good son thing to do.
Yes.
And Annabeth has been back to camp twice since Christmas, and Percy gets ticked off because she didn't tell him.
Because it's a bad friend thing to do, to be in town and not tell your friend.
Yep. So, when they get to camp, Peleus the dragon is doubled in size.
Wow.
And is, like, friends with Annabeth. And there's, like, an air of tension in the camp. Like, something is not quite right. So, Annabeth mentioned something about needing to speak with Clarice. Clarice, of all people.
Of all people. That means that Clarice is growing in maturity and, like, oh, Clarice, you beautiful human being.
So, Annabeth runs off without explaining anything and just leaves Percy, like, oh, okay, nice to talk to you, too. So, Percy is just, like, wandering around camp saying hi to his friends and checking things out.
Doesn't he make a random stop to the, to Blackjack?
That's later.
No, okay.
Never mind. I think. So, yeah, he makes his way to the sword arena because he loves, like, being there. And there he meets Quintus and Mrs. O'Leary, his giant pet hellhound.
I sort of, before we get too far into it, I do want to talk about Annabeth not talking to Thing. I just want to highlight one line, because it's a summary of Percy's education at camp. And it says, "You'll see," she said, but she didn't explain. That's it. That's it. That's his education. No one ever explains things to Percy. That's all I needed to say. Jeez.
True. You'll see.
You'll see.
She didn't explain. True.
Yeah.
That pretty much just sums up, like, the last 3 books.
Yeah. Yeah. No one tells Percy anything. He's just expected to know or figure it out. And then they yell at him when he doesn't know.
Yeah. And call him names and stuff.
Yeah, he's like Rudolph.
Aw. So, yeah, Percy gets freaked out because there's a giant hellhound just, like, chilling in the sword arena. That'd be pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
But it turns out Mrs. O'Leary, the hellhound, belongs to Quintus. And Quintus is this older demigod who's survived into, like, his 50s, I guess.
Yeah.
He's got, like, salt and pepper hair, and he's, like, real handsome and stuff. And what does Percy say? He's, like, he was pretty handsome for an older guy or something like that.
He was in his 50s, I guess, with short gray hair and a clipped gray beard. he was in good shape for an older guy.
Yeah.
So he doesn't say he's handsome, but he does say he's in good shape for an older guy. Yeah. So that's like the equivalent of a 15-year-old saying, that old guy looks pretty nice.
Yeah. I don't know. Perseus notices a lot of things.
Yeah.
He's just being an observant Percy Jackson again.
But, Quintus is all like, oh, blah, 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 blah. Doesn't he say stuff about, like, oh, when I was a kid?
Yeah, he does.
When I was a kid, I never had no camps like this. That's why it's so rare to see an old demigod.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That just makes me wonder when either he was a kid or when was Camp Half-Blood built.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we've gotten the feeling from Chiron, but not that Chiron ever tells anybody anything, that the camp has been in where it is in Long Island Sound for quite a few years now, at least.
Yeah, like, I was thinking, like, a long time.
I was thinking, yeah.
Like, a couple hundred years, at least. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking maybe 100, but okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird to me.
Yeah, but we also don't know how old maybe Quintus it wasn't really is, until after. You know?
Yeah, we don't know how old
like, Quintus how, is. Because, like, how fast do the demigods age once they get past childhood?
Ooh, that's a good question. Is it something like a... What's the child's name in Twilight? Renesmee, that made up name.
Yeah.
The vampire human mix. I don't know. Hybrid.
Hybrid.
Like, yes. Oh, they were all like freaking out that she's grown too fast and she'll be an old man or old woman by the time she's 2 years old.
Yeah, because she's like born and then she like is 5 years old already. Yeah. Essentially, yeah. I don't know, I never read those books.
Yeah, oh. They were bad. I recommend them.
Anyway.
Just once. You read them once and then be like, why did I read this? This was bad. That's all you gotta do. That's why you read the books. You read them and then you're like, what? I feel bad now.
I was all that time. I'd rather just read good books, like the Percy Jackson series.
Anyway. The Percy Jackson series?
Okay. So, yeah, Quintus is an interesting fellow.
Mm-hmm.
He has several crates full of something to test the campers with because he they need me, more it, challenges.
Yeah. Reminds me of, like, Hagrid.
Really?
Just, like, with his, like, ooh, hello, everybody, I got a special crate. It'll be fun.
Yeah, but, like, Hagrid is, like, a
Hagrid big is, goofball. Yes. I'm Quintus not saying, is not that. I'm not saying, like, reminds me of Hagrid in personality, just like in the same thing. I feel like Hagrid and Quintus would get along.
Because they're like dangerous monsters?
Yes.
Alright, I can see that.
Yeah.
But before they get into too much discussion, Chiron comes up and takes Percy away. So they go to the forest, to a place Percy had never been in the forest
into
before.
The woods.
Where Grover is in the middle of a hearing with the Council of Cloven Elders, who are fat and gross and old and mean.
That don't gross like them. And old and mean?
Yep. So basically they're mad that Grover hasn't found Pan yet, and they think that his claims that he heard Pan speak to him are false.
I don't understand why they are mad about this, because it's like, this is the first time anybody's heard anything from Pan in literally thousands of years. Why would you think all of a sudden his one person heard him? Oh, that means we're going to be finding him right around the corner.
I think it's because they
don't
underestimate Grover, and they think, why would Pan speak to Grover?
Oh, okay.
You know, what's special about Grover?
Mm-hmm. Like, if anybody, he should have spoken to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
And Juniper is there. She's a dryad, and she's Grover's girlfriend.
Aww. I love that when Percy describes her, and he's like, oh, her chlorophyll-filled, whatever. Yeah, like, she's
instead
like...
of her eyes getting bloodshot, they turn green.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's cute.
Yeah.
And the elders are like, you haven't found Pan yet. You're the worst. And Grover's like, well, like you said, it's been thousands and thousands of years that we're looking for him. It's not going to happen overnight. And they're like, well, guess what, bro? We're going to give you one more week to find Pan, or you're going to lose your searcher's license forever. And Grover's just like, how am I going to find Pan in 1 week?
Yeah.
So then they proceed to spend the next 2 days at camp, and he's immediately down the 5 days.
Yeah.
The Council of Cloven Elders sucks.
But Grover is mean, the procrastination.
Grover's what?
He's just like, okay, I only have 5 days. All right, I'm going to wait around for two of them and then panic on the last three.
Yeah. Yep. So Grover kind of goes off with Juniper, and they're like, all right, everybody, get back to your cabins for inspection. And Percy is a freaking slob.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, no, not inspection, and has to, like, run his hardest to get back to his cabin.
Because he left it a mess over the winter.
He knows that he's a slob, and he's just like, I don't want to do kitchen duty again.
Yeah, he's like, oh, if I do really well, like, if I get the best inspection, I get early showers. If not, I have to wash all these dishes by myself. I'm like, dude, just clean your room.
And it's not even, like... He's the only one who lives there, so literally, he probably could only just, like, okay, just put everything on, hide everything under the bed, make the bed, throw things in the garbage. That's all you need to do.
Yeah. He probably has, like, a chest to keep his things in. Shoop.
Yeah, just hide the mess. Like, he doesn't have to, like, change his ways. If he just wants to pass the thing and not change his ways and become a clean person, as he should. Just stuff the stuff away. He's gonna beat someone else. He'll beat the Hermes cabin if nothing else.
Yeah. But he left trash in there from when he disappeared last
winter. That would be disgusting.
You know how gross those, like, empty chip bags would be? Mm-mm. So lucky.
It's a cabin.
Yeah.
Bugs in there.
And it's the sea god's cabin, so it's, like, damp.
It's, like, gonna be hermit crabs eating your chips.
But lucky for Perseus Jackson, he finds Tyson there.
Oh!
Yay! And he's wearing, like, an apron and rubber gloves, and he's cleaning. Yay, Tyson.
Tyson's the best.
And the place is, like, sparkling clean. The cleanest it's been since Percy moved in, probably. And so Selena Beauregard.
But he hasn't just cleaned the room. He's also, like, made improvements.
Yes.
He's, like, added a, what is it? A hippocampi, whatever.
Like, it's like a mobile.
Yeah, mobile.
Like the things they make for babies to move. Yeah. But it's hippocampi.
A herd of miniature bronze hippocampi hung on two wires from the ceiling, so it looked like they were swimming through the air.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
And he fixed Percy's shield.
Yeah.
Tyson's been busy.
Tyson's the best.
Tyson is the best. I remember when I first read this, I was like, ugh, Tyson's so annoying, because he wasn't part of, like, the original squad, you know? Mm-hmm. When I was little, I hated it when they introduced characters, because it's like, so, I would get so attached to, like, the original ones.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, how can they mess with perfection?
How dare they?
Yeah.
But Tyson's great. And then, because Tyson's cleaned the rooms, when Selena Beauregard, head of the Aphrodite cabin, comes in, she's just like, all right, nice. Percy. Nice.
And she winks at him all flirty.
I feel like she does it because she's the daughter of Aphrodite, so she knows the power of a wink, but she also knows, like, maybe to her it means, I'm going to put in a good word with you with Annabeth. I'm going to make sure to do this. And, like, I think she has her own plans for everybody in the camp. And she's just like, I know what's best for you. But
her plan is Percy and Selena showing, ending up together.
I don't think that's her plan.
No? You never know.
No. I feel like maybe she like, took that idea in her mind and she went, maybe, and then she saw Percy and Annabeth together, and she was like, yes.
Either way, she's cool. I like Selena. Big fan of the Aphrodite cabin. And Aphrodite. Tyson and Percy just go, like, hang out with Annabeth, but, like, canoeing on the lake and stuff. But she is happy to see Tyson, but she's really distracted. And they, like, go hang out with Quintus, who is really cool, seems like. And he has, like, this brand on his neck, and Percy is rude AF, and he's like, what's that on your neck?
Yeah, and he's just like, oh, wait, I shouldn't have said that. But sometimes ADD, I can't help it.
He can't stop thinking about it. And Quintus just says, oh, it's just a reminder, and, like, shifts his armor so it covers it again.
A reminder of what?
We don't know. But Tyson calls Mrs. O'Leary a little doggy, which is aww, so cute. He's so cute.
I feel it's the best way. You're only supposed to call big dogs little dogs and little dogs big dogs. If you call the little dog a big dog, it improves their confidence. If you call him a big dog a little guy, it improves their confidence.
Okay. So at dinner, Percy, like, steps over the crack from the fissure that
Nico or he'll made break last his winter. Mother's back.
Yep. Never want to step on those cracks, kids. Don't want to hurt Queen Sally. He brings back bad memories for Percy to go into the dining pavilion, which is not a good place to associate bad memories with.
Yeah, you're going to have to go there a lot.
Yeah. And Tyson's like, big crack, you know.
Earthquake, maybe?
And Percy tells Tyson about what happened with Nico last winter.
I love that he tells Tyson about it. He's in, like, Titan's Curse. He doesn't tell him that Annabeth is missing. He tells Tyson select amount of information, just like everybody else does with him. And I think that's a sign that Camp Half-Blood is indoctrinating him in their bad teaching styles. And
he just didn't want to worry Tyson when he was under the earth. Under the sea, making swords for the militia.
Yeah, yeah. But I just love that he tells him. It says, like, I wasn't sure I should tell him. It was a secret only Annabeth and Grover and I knew. But looking in Tyson's big eye, I knew I couldn't hide anything from him.
Because he's a sweetie pie.
Yeah.
But he swears Tyson the secrecy, and Tyson is...
He's mouth sealed, Tyson promised, like the crack in the ground. I feel like that could be, like...
It's very ominous.
Yeah.
Oh, good old Tyson. But later that night, Percy is having trouble falling asleep, and the saltwater fountain in the corner lights up the room and asks him to deposit a drachma.
Ooh.
So, luckily, there's one in there from, like, the last time he used it, I guess. And he tosses it in. He's like, oh, the goddess Iris, show me whatever you need to show me. And so... She shows him Nico,
ooh,
knelt at the edge of the river Styx, looking rough, like he's been living on the streets, because he has. And he's burning all his mythal magic cards and talking to a ghost.
I have my theories of who the ghost is.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Who?
I'm not telling.
When are they?
I'm not telling, because what if they're right?
Then you don't want to be able to point back at this recording and say, see, I was right.
I think it's going to be... King Minos.
Mm.
Because he had a lot to do with the labyrinth. And supposedly, he is supposed to be one of the judges of the underworld. So we know that he's a ghost out there. And he's now a ghost that has forgotten everything. I feel like he's just... He knows that people are in his labyrinth. Yeah. I don't know. That's my theory. Yeah.
Yep.
Could be other things.
So, it's so sad that Nico is burning his mythal magic cards.
Yeah.
Because this is, like, the death of his childhood, symbolically, even though he's only 11.
Yeah. And you do have to wonder how long he was into mythal magic. Like, was he only into mythal magic after he got out of the Lotus Casino?
I don't know.
Did that lawyer, the mysterious lawyer who picked him up, give him the cards before he... And that's what got him into it? I don't know.
Don't you think it would have been cool if Rick had switched Nico and Bianca and, like, made Bianca the child of the prophecy? Or, you know, the potential child of the prophecy? I mean, I like Nico a lot.
I do, too. I think
it would be cool to have, like, another girl.
I was thinking about the male-to-female ratio, or, like, character ratio. And at this point, I do think that there's more female characters, like, at least female half-bloods. That, like, really have an impact on the story.
Yeah.
And I just like making things up, though. So, like, I don't know. I might be
missing... You never.
I know, right? I might be missing people, so that's why I'm...
We've got Annabeth.
Talia, Clarice, Rachel, Bianca, Zoe. I guess Selena.
That actually is a lot, because we really only have, like, Lee Fletcher, who's new. Like, I don't remember them mentioning Lee before this
chapter. I don't either. And then, so in the boys' corner, it's Percy, Nico, Grover, Tyson, Charles, the Stoll brothers. Oh, I guess.
That's kind of equal.
And then Lee Fletcher. Yeah, so, like, the boys are only outweigh the girls, right, at this point, by, like, two.
Yeah.
But, considering two of the girls are dead.
And one of them we'll probably never see again.
At least not soon.
That was a long time. Yeah. Kind of rough. No, but I think
so we have hope for female characters.
I never feel like he's purposely excluding mm-hmm. female characters.
Yeah.
Especially because Annabeth is, like, apparently the main character of this book.
She is the main character, according to the Riordan Wiki.
Yeah.
Wiki.
Which is nice, because a lot of times it's just like, oh my god, there's no women in this book for 10 chapters.
Mm-hmm. That's what, I don't know, that's what I feel about Harry Potter sometimes. It's like, yeah, Hermione's a great character, but where are the other female characters, and why is it that the first 14 chapters have zero female characters other than Mrs. Petunia,
Mrs. Petunia?
Mrs. Petunia.
Mrs. Dursley.
Mrs. Dursley.
She's Aunt the Petunia. Worst.
She's awesome. She's gross.
She's the worst. So, Nico, I like Nico. I'm not saying we shouldn't have Nico.
It would be interesting
to discuss.
Yes. If Bianca was survived and Nico did not.
Yeah.
I feel like that would mean that Bianca would not have joined the Hunters.
What if she and Talia had both joined?
Well, then Percy would still be the child of the prophecy.
Yeah, but that's the only way I can think of that he would have had the dispatcher.
Yeah.
Like, get her out of the way for the prophecy.
Well, he could always kill her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I do think that Bianca would have more of it. I feel like there would be more of a risk of Bianca turning on the gods. Maybe that's just me.
I don't know. From what this Iris message shows us,
Nico's pretty,
not in a good place now.
Yeah.
Either. He is talking to this ghost, and the ghost is encouraging him to get vengeance for his sister's death. And Nico's like, you're talking about murder. And the ghost is like, no, we're talking about vengeance.
It's like, ah!
And so Nico's like, well, I already offered my soul in exchange for Bianca's, which is just heartbreaking. And the ghost is like, your dad doesn't want your soul. He's going to get it anyway. You have to find someone who should have died already and exchange a soul for a soul. And Nico's like, kind of resistant to this plan at first. And then he's like, well, what's your idea? What do you think we should do? And the ghost is like, yes, I have a plan. And just as he's about to tell Nico the plan, the Iris message asks Percy to deposit another drachma, which Percy doesn't have, and the message ends.
Mm.
So this lovely chapter ends with Percy thinking that no matter what the plan is, it involves Nico D'Angelo coming after him.
Yeah, because he says, I had a feeling I knew what soul he wanted to exchange. Someone who had cheated death, vengeance. Nico D'Angelo would be looking for me. But has Percy cheated death?
That's kind of what I was thinking, because, like, he's fought a lot. He went into the
he's almost died a lot, but I wouldn't think that would be cheating death by almost dying.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. I think Percy is thinking that, but it's not really.
Yeah, I don't think the target would be him.
Mm-mm. I don't know who it would be.
Mm-mm.
Can't be Zoe.
No, she dead.
Yeah, she stopped.
It's Chiron. He should have died a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, Percy did go into the underworld.
Yeah, but it's not like he has died and come back already and then has to get dispatched.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Me neither. It's not what Percy thinks it is.
Mm-mm.
But regardless, it doesn't sound good.
No, not good.
So that brings us to chapter 3. We play tag with scorpions.
I gave it 5 stars.
Really?
Really? I gave it 5 stars?
I gave it 3.
I gave it 4.5 here. No. No, I gave it 3.5 here. Oh. I'm going to go with 3.5. I don't know why I wrote 5 down here. Yes, I gave it 3.5 stars. You were
really feeling it at one point.
I was really feeling it one time, but I was also really not feeling it another time.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like fighting is not that exciting.
Yeah.
And it's not funny. So, gets fewer stars for me. In the morning, there's a lot of excitement at breakfast.
Yeah. Because a dracon was sighted.
Yeah, Lee Fletcher saw an Ethiopian dracon wandering around the borders of camp trying to find a weakness in the defenses.
I like that Lee Fletcher is from, like, is a son of Apollo, because Fletcher, like, arrows, and Apollo is the god of archery.
Nice.
Fletch, the arrow, ha, get it, oh my god, Rick,
Yeah, he's good. He's like another, he's like a new male, older camper.
Yeah, guy. That we have not seen before.
Yeah, I don't remember ever seeing him. It's just like him and Charles Beckendorf. And
Charles is pretty cool, even yeah. though we haven't really talked to him.
But he's nice to Tyson when nobody else is, so mm-hmm. I automatically liked him after that. And that's something that Percy and Tyson do, is go visit him in the forges.
Yeah.
Charles is like, whoa, dude, you're good.
Yeah.
Tyson's like, I know.
Well, because in Sea of Monsters, Percy brings Tyson to the forges, and Charles is like, here's some tools that you can try and figure out.
Yeah.
And then a year later, Tyson comes back like, hey, I've made 15,000 magic swords. And Beckendorf is just like,
wow.
Whoa, man.
Yeah, he's very impressed. I like Charles. So, Chiron brings... Oh!
Well, basically breakfast, Percy's able to look around and see all of the campers there, and he's he notices that there's a lot fewer than there
used to be. Yeah, it's crazy, because it's like, in the book, it's like, some like died, three, yeah. some joined Luke, and some just went missing. I'm like, who has died?
Yeah.
How? Why?
Some had joined Luke, some had just disappeared. What?
Why? Yeah. Why are we not hearing about this before?
Like, and it goes from 80, so in 3 years ago when I'd started, there had been more than 100, and now there's like 80. So at least 20 people have either gone missing, dead
or
joined the dark side. And we already know that there's... I don't know. That's crazy numbers to me. And I would think that most of those happened between Sea of Monsters and Titan's Curse, or Sea of Monsters and Battle of the Labyrinth, because that's the first full year.
Yeah. That's it's just lot. Like, why have we not heard more about these people just disappearing?
I know. Like, I feel like it's because Percy spends so little amount of time at camp.
Yeah.
We don't meet all of these campers. True. And then when they go missing, it's sort of just like, oh.
They gone.
Yeah.
Sad. But yeah, they're eating breakfast at their stupid tables that we hate.
Yes.
And Chiron brings Grover over to the Poseidon table in the dining pavilion. And Tyson lumbers off to go polish his ponies because he's afraid of Grover. And Grover's afraid of him.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad, but funny.
And Chiron is being so sneaky and annoying and confusing in this moment when he's like, Percy, could you, like, talk to Grover?
Yeah, and Chiron asks Percy how he slept. And Percy's like, that's a weird question considering I slept really badly.
Mm-hmm.
And considering the Iris message.
Yeah. And then, Chiron doesn't, supposedly he does not know that Nico is a son of Hades, or even if he's still alive. Supposedly Chiron is completely in the dark on Nico, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the questions that he's asking are very suspicious to me.
Yeah, real suspicious. I think Chiron knows more than he's going to let Percy know.
Chiron always knows more, and he'll never say. It's very annoying.
So, Chiron wants Percy to convince Grover of something that we don't know.
Because he won't say. Because he's annoying.
Yeah. So Annabeth comes over to the Poseidon table, which is against the rules, but Chiron left the pavilion. Mr. D isn't there because he's off fighting with the Olympians, and Quintus just raises an eyebrow at them.
Yeah.
So Percy's like, you're not supposed to be here, and she's like, whatever, I need to talk to you.
It's like, I'm gonna be here.
So Annabeth finally explains the mission that Clarice went on last summer when she was gone.
Yeah.
So,
And she wasn't gone just that summer. She was gone throughout Titan's Curse, wasn't she? She was still gone in Titan's Curse.
Yeah. So Clarice was gone a long time.
Yeah.
The mission that Clarice went on was to investigate the labyrinth, which is like a massive maze.
A massive maze ruled by David Bowie underneath the earth.
So in fact, when it was first made, it just like lived under a building, but now it like follows the west.
Yeah.
And is like spans the United States. So there's entrances all over the country. Yeah, at least, probably more. The reason that they know about this labyrinth is because Chris Rodriguez just appeared at Clarice's house in Arizona one day.
Well, not at her house, but near her house.
Yeah. And he was just wandering in the desert babbling about string.
And in, like, Greek armor. Yeah. Like, suspicious.
Yeah.
He was going to get locked up in an institution. Yeah. And Clarice was like, no, he's my friend.
I'll take care of him. Yeah, but we know that Chris is on Luke's side because you saw him on the yacht, mm-hmm. on Princess Andromeda in the Sea of Monsters.
Yeah.
So, lots of people conveniently showing up in convenient places in this book. Basically, he was driven mad by wandering through the labyrinth. So they figured that Luke must be looking for an entrance, for a way through the labyrinth so he can sneak attack Camp Half-Blood. Kapow!
Kapow, kapow.
And so they're like, well, they wanted to investigate the labyrinth first. And a smart person who, like, can control the labyrinth can manipulate it to take them wherever they want to go. So wherever there's an entrance, if you can, like, manipulate the labyrinth, you can get there.
Yeah, if you try hard enough or whatever, you can manipulate the labyrinth. Yeah. And make the labyrinth work for you.
Yeah.
But it's much easier to just go mad.
Yeah. Because the labyrinth is designed to confuse and trick and distract people, and there's monsters in it, so it's like a very dangerous, terrifying place.
Yeah.
Or they can just go insane, like Chris. Mm-hmm. But if the smart person has Ariadne's string, they cannot get lost.
What is it? You can get anywhere through the labyrinth. If you don't get lost, Grover muttered, and die horrible death. Grover, there has to be a way, Annabeth said. I got the feeling that they'd had this conversation before. Clarice lived? Barely, Grover said. And the other guy? He was driven insane. He didn't die. Oh, joy.
Oh, joy. So they think that Pan might be in the labyrinth because he's been hiding and traveling fast, apparently.
Yeah, and it would make sense why the satyrs hadn't been able to find him, because the satyrs don't like going underground.
Yes. So they want Percy to convince Grover to go into the labyrinth to find Pan. And they want to potentially stop Luke from finding Camp Half-Blood. But Clarice searched for entrances all over, like, Long Island and only found, like, the closest entrances were in Manhattan.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, it couldn't be that bad, right? Mm-hmm. Sure. So, after dinner, the campers meet up with Quintus, who's all decked out, or they're all decked out in full armor, and they get paired up for the special surprise.
I love this when, like, he's just like, you'll be in teams of twos, and everyone starts, like, pairing up, and he's like, that I've already chosen.
Yeah.
No! But then he teams them up, and basically, I would think, close to what they would have wanted, like, the Stoll brothers are together, Charles and Selena are together, and I think Charles is for reals happy about that. And Selena can learn to live with it.
Yeah. The only people who aren't happy with their pairing are Grover and Tyson, who are paired together. Yay!
And they're all like, wait, what?
Quintus is like, I'll put the two weird people together.
Well, I think that he knows that Grover and Tyson would work together very well. Like, they would probably be able to team up very well together.
Yeah.
But they don't like each other at this point. They're scared of each other just because of what they are. They don't know each other.
So he did it on purpose?
Yeah.
So, The surprise is a bunch of giant scorpions carrying silk packages, and one of these packages contains some golden laurels, so whoever finds the laurels first wins.
So, but my thing is that, so there's six scorpions, one of those scorpions has the golden laurels. So people can go and kill a scorpion and get their package and find out that they're not a golden laurel. Mm-hmm. And then they have to go off and hunt another scorpion. Mm-hmm. It'd be just exhausting. Imagine if one team found all six separately.
And they found the golden laurels at the very end.
Yeah,
the
last just be one. Like, I can't believe, why? Why did I do this today?
And everybody else is just like, are there even any scorpions in here?
And I think that's probably what they end up feeling, because if Annabeth and Percy end up getting most of the scorpions.
Yeah. Quintus is such a savage. So, Percy and Annabeth are paired together, so they start heading out into the woods. And they get to the rock where they, like, stopped searching for Nico, and they have a little moment, and Percy tells Annabeth about the iris message and everything, and she's like, yeah, that doesn't sound good. Yeah, so then they continue, and they go to Zeus's fist, which is, like, the rocks that kind of look like a fist or a pile of poop, depending how you look at it, and they find Juniper, and I love what she says to them, because she's like, hold on, let me find it. She says... Are you guys busy? Juniper asked. Well, I said, we're in the middle of this game against a bunch of monsters and we're trying not to die. We're not busy. And Beth said, what's wrong, Juniper? Not busy at all.
No. Okay. Well, it really, they aren't. It's still a game. They can...
fail.
Yeah.
But whenever have they been okay with failing? They take this stuff so seriously.
They do take this stuff really seriously. But really, the chances are they... If they were not Percy and Annabeth, they would probably be fine.
Yeah.
Taking a break.
So Juniper is crying because she's concerned about Grover, and she says that she thinks Grover is seeing another tree.
That's stupid.
And he's just getting more and more distraught, and Annabeth's trying to comfort her, and Juniper's like, I just want to help him. And Annabeth's like, we want to help him too. We just don't know how. And Juniper is like, well, about that. And then they all get interrupted by three giant scorpions coming right at them. So they're fighting the scorpions, but they're having a hard time because there's three of them. And they're huge.
Percy's like, we could take one, no problem. We might be able to take two.
Three, no way.
No.
Yeah, so he's like, Annabeth, slip in between the rocks. And Annabeth's like, no, that's way too narrow. And Percy's like, just go. So Annabeth does, she, like, slips between the two of the stones, and she, like, cries out and reaches out and grabs Percy's armor and pulls him down into a hole.
Was not a crack. Did not make sense.
It's just a hole. And it, like, closes above them like a camera lens. It's just, like, poof, it's gone. Like, the entrance is gone. And they find themselves in this seemingly endless, like, stone corridor in complete darkness. And... the entrance is gone, and they're just like, what is going on here? And Annabeth, ever making connections as usual, finds the mark of Daedalus.
Daedalus?
Presses it, and the ceiling opens, and a ladder appears. So, yay, they get out. And they climb out, and they find half the camp, like, searching for them.
Yeah.
And they're like, guys, what's wrong? Like, we were only gone for a few minutes, so the game should still be going on. But it's, like, super dark, and everybody's like, no, you were gone for at least an hour. Like, what? So, right away, we see that whatever this place is, time works differently there.
Yeah.
So, Annabeth...
My thing is, wouldn't they have asked Juniper?
Not if she didn't feel like talking to him.
I guess. Grover, come on, talk to your girlfriend.
Yeah. Maybe when she disappeared, she, like,
she probably went just away. Went back to her tree.
True.
She's right outside the rocks. She's right
there.
Yeah,
maybe she's hiding because of the other people she's seen around the rock. But Annabeth reveals, obviously, she's, like, in her dramatic way, she's like, we found an entrance to the labyrinth. It's right in the heart of camp. Direct route for the Kronos' army to get to camp.
It's like, thanks for saying this in front of an extremely large crowd and inciting panic.
Yeah. So, that's fun.
Yeah. And that's where we ended.
Yeah.
And where we pick up next episode is chapter 4. But before we get to four. Oh my gods, it's time for oh my gods. So the first guy we're talking about today is Salinas. He is the, the big mean guy who yells at Seder. Yells at Grover. He's in the Council of Cloven Elders. Yes. That's the guy I'm talking about. Yes. Salinas. He is the child of Hermes and an unknown nymph. But Salinas was a pot-bellied, donkey-tailed old drunk who was both teacher and follower of Dionysus. And Salinas was most famous, or his most famous characteristic is that he was always drunk. And that he always either had to be supported by satyrs or by a donkey. If he was without, he was either going to fall down and get lost or whatever. He was drunk.
Nice.
So, he is also one of the big stories around Salinas, which I'm going to talk about, I'm not going to tell you the ending of it because I feel like we might end up having to talk about it some other time. So, he is the one really responsible for the Midas curse. So, where touch everything and it turns to gold.
Yes.
Sounds like a terrible curse, right? Right. It's a terrible curse. Don't do it.
Yeah, because he touched his daughter and she turned into gold.
Spoiler alert! So Salinas was lost in a drunken wander and he found himself in the kingdom of Midas. And Midas was a good king, but he was a poor king. He was really nice and whatever, and he was like, oh, this drunken guy is here? Oh, and he's a friend of Dionysus? Well, either way, I'm going to treat him with all the hospitality that I can afford. So he had 10 days of Salinas just partying it up in King Midas's house and stuff, eating all the food, drinking all the wine, sort of making this already poor king poorer. And after 10 days, Salinas was like, all right, we can go, let's go back to Dionysus. So Midas is like, cool. So they did a nice long walk to the vineyards that Dionysus was keen to visit at that time of year. And Dionysus was so happy to see his best friend. He was like, oh my god, my best friend, I haven't seen him in days. And Salinas is like, I know, right? I was hanging out with this really nice guy, King Midas, and he even helped me get here. Isn't he so nice? And Dionysus is like, oh my god, King Midas, you're the best human being. I was hating human beings, but now I love human beings. You know what, King Midas? King Midas. King Midas, I want to grant you a wish. Anything you want, just say the word, I'll give it to you. I'll give it to you, whatever you want. And King Midas was like, wow, that was a lot.
Let me begin the list.
Let me get the list. Well, you know what, to solve all of this, or the quickest, solve this list that I now have to fix because Salinas sort of wrecked my house. Mm-hmm. I need some money. So how about, I wish that everything that I touch turns to gold. And Dionysus was like, seems like a dumb wish, but I'll grant it. Go home, take a fancy bath, and then everything you touch will turn to gold. And we're going to leave it like that right now. We'll talk about that some other time. But let's just say it didn't end happily ever after for King Midas. But Dionysus was reunited with his best friend, Salinas.
That's good.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that this was a Greek story.
What, King Midas? I was first introduced to that story from The Muppets, so.
Really?
Yeah. There's a weird Muppets. I think it's a movie where they're putting on a big variety show. It's just the movie version of The Muppet Show from probably long time ago.
Yeah.
But they have a King Midas story, and Kermit is King Midas and Fozzie is Salinas.
Cute. I'm pretty sure he just read about it in some fairy tale anthology that I had.
Probably. So I also wanted to talk about Peleus, and Peleus was the name of the dragon that that Chiron has purchased to guard the Golden Fleece and Camp Half-Blood.
And Annabeth's best friend.
It's always good to make friends with the guard dogs or guard dragons.
Yeah.
So Peleus is a name from Greek mythology, and I do want to just sort of touch him on who he was. Peleus was most famous for being the husband of Theseus. We don't have many famous husbands, so good on you, Peleus. Theseus was a sea nymph, and she was the mother of Achilles. So Peleus is the father of Achilles.
Oh, nice. Yes.
But he did outlive Achilles, so sad now. But Peleus himself also had a very, very complicated life. First, when he was, like, growing up, he, accidentally kills a cousin randomly. And because of that, he and his brother Telamon were banished from their father's kingdom of Aegina. And then Peleus went away, and he was just like, I shall purify myself, as so many Greek myths start, that like they're like, oh, I've done something terrible. I shall purify myself at this fancy place. Well, he went to purify himself at this fancy place, and the king of that place was like, hey, you should totally come here, we'll treat ya. And while you're getting purified. And then, that king's wife started hitting on Peleus, and Peleus refused her, but she got angry, and she went to the king's daughter, Antigone, and was like, hey, Peleus is married. You can't even marry him, and I can't marry him. No one can marry him. And Antigone kills herself.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a crazily complicated story.
Remember when we read that?
Yeah.
In freshman year at university?
Mm-hmm. Antigone by Sophocles.
Or remember when it was assigned and I pretended to read it because it was stupid? I just really hated the version that they chose. But I also really hated that whole class.
That was a weird class.
So,
and it was a required class for everybody who went to the university.
Yep.
But I saw a play version of Antigone, and it was terrible.
Really?
Yeah, they tried to modernize it, and then they, I don't know, they made it so that Antigone and, I guess, Peleus, run away together. And then kill each other and commit, like, suicide, double suicide, and then everybody just commits suicide. It was just, it was like, this was already a tragedy.
Yeah.
And you've just made it worse. Weirder. And poor work bad. It was literally, it was just bad. And
I think I remember you telling me about that.
It was a bad play.
I think it's just bad, bad, in general.
Yeah. They randomly just have, like, one guy, I think he had a pet raven, and he basically had a raven stuffed animal on a stick, and he would drag it around and talk to the raven, because I think he was supposed to be the Greek chorus, and instead of being a Greek chorus and talking to the audience, he would talk to the raven.
That's weird.
It was weird. It was a really, really weird and bad play.
Huh.
But Peleus is the father of Achilles.
Yes.
Okay. Now, bring on the monsters.
Bring on the monsters.
So what we're talking about today is the Imposia. Impusa. Impusa. Impusie? Impusie.
Impusae.
So Impusae are female vampiric monsters who in myth are followers / servants. It sort of depends on what, I don't know what the word you would use to describe. I don't know. They're like, they're the henchmen. Hench people. Followers of the goddess Hecate, who was, and they were originally sent out to scare travelers. So that was their original job, which is strange because they are not built for that job in any way. Because, so it was sort of like their job was to scare travelers, and everyone was, it was a laughable thing. Because, so they have one brass leg, one donkey leg, and that sounds funny enough. And it doesn't help that they're supposed to come up and basically just annoy the traveler to death. And, like, they do have sharp teeth and stuff, so they could kill you, potentially, but it was very unlikely because it was really easy to get rid of them because you could just scare them away by insulting her. Just be like, "Heh, look at your donkey leg. Heh, heh, you only got half an ass. Ha! Where's your leg? Ha!"
So metal leg. They would just run away.
Yeah, they would just scream and run away.
Oh my gosh, that's not very effective.
And like people were like, I found one website. Oh, blah blah blah. I didn't write the websites down, but they said children were threatened with visits from this the awkward imposai. I love that they described them as awkward.
Yeah.
They were not always these absurd, awkward creatures because they were also. Because they were not meant to scare travelers. Their true calling was luring young men into the bed and ultimately to their death. So they had these weird legs, the donkey leg and the middle leg. And then they also had pale skin and sharp teeth and la la scariness. But they could, like, they could basically turn themselves into beautiful women. They could, like, mystify themselves and make themselves look like beautiful women and seduce young men into their beds or into their clutches, and then they would
eat them
and suck their blood from their victims as they ate their flesh.
Gross.
Yeah.
That's why Percy has such a hard time focusing when Kelly's trying to eat him.
Yeah, because they're succubus and vampires. They can entrap you with their gaze. Yeah. Oh. I don't know. It's interesting that there's a lot of different vampires in a lot of different cultures. But every culture has a vampire-esque creature. Yeah. It's strange to me.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, that's all I was going to talk about for Oh My Gods and Bring on the Monsters this episode, because we could talk about Daedalus and the Labyrinth and other people, but...
We don't want to.
We haven't met Daedalus yet. Maybe I'll get into more detail next episode. Things will be talked about, but just not yet.
Yeah. Too early for all that.
Mm-hmm. Alright, you ready for...
Quest queries! Yeah.
Cool.
We only have one. We already talked about the first
one. Oh yeah, we did. So, what movie do you think Percy and Annabeth were going to see? And so, for this question, I did a little bit of research because this book takes place in the summer of 2007. So, that narrows down the multitudes of movies that we can list to... the movies that came out in the summer of 2007. And I narrowed that even further down to just the blockbusters. A lot of movies came out, and we can narrow things even further down by when does this book take place specifically? Is this end of May, early June?
I think it's beginning of June.
Beginning of June? So we can cut out...
It's been 6 months since December. Yeah, but there I was Monday morning, the first week of June.
Okay.
Singing in my mom's car in front of Good High School on East 81st.
All right. So we're cutting out...
everything after the first week of June.
So I'm going to cut out everything after June 11th. So that cuts Evan Almighty and Live Free Die Hard, Ratatouille, Transformers, Harry Potter and the Order of Phoenix... Hairspray, I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, that needs to be cut from existence. The Simpsons, Born Ultimatum, Rush Hour 3, Stardust,
oh,
all of that can
Stardust
go.
Would be appropriate for them, though.
It would be.
So that leaves Spider-Man 3, that's too early. Well,
it would still be in theaters.
28 weeks later, nah.
Yeah. Oh, wait, 28. Yeah, they probably wouldn't see 28.
They wouldn't see a scary movie. Shrek the Third, they might. Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End.
I don't think they would go see Shrek the Third.
I don't think they would see Knocked Up or Ocean's 13.
I think they might see Ocean's 13. It's all those Ocean's movies are standalone, just
great.
No. They're standalone plots.
That was the first one, or no, 11 was the first one. I didn't see the one with the remake where it's all the women.
Oh,
the
I like wives. That one. I don't think I've watched many of the new ones. It's like so.
Yeah.
The ones with, I don't know, what's his name? What are their names?
George Clooney?
George Clooney. Those ones I have not seen. The ones with Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. I've seen those ones.
Of course you have. I don't know. I think they might see Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Or Pirates of the Caribbean.
I'm pretty sure I saw Pirates of the Caribbean when it came out.
I don't know. Maybe Fantastic Four.
I think that they would go see Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah. Or Ocean's 13. I honestly do think Annabeth might be into that. Because I think it's more Annabeth that's the deciding factor in these movies. But also, they're going to see a movie in New York, so it could be they're going to go see some kind of indie film. Maybe they're going to go see a daytime showing of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
One of those limited release movies that we don't get here because we don't get cool enough movies.
Yeah. Maybe they're going to go see the, I don't know, filming of a TV show. No, probably not. That just sounds like it would be a long day.
Yeah. No, I think they're just going to go watch a movie and eat some popcorn.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it does.
It does. So do you have any ideas of what they would go and see? We'll probably put this up on our Instagram and Twitter and stuff and see what you guys say. If you have anything that you want to say, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at floor_600 and at Tumblr at floor600podcast.
Join our Patreon at patreon.com/floor600. We have 4 different levels you can join at, and they have cool names and cool rewards, so go check them out.
Check it out.
You're already listening to us.
So keep listening.
Keep listening.
Subscribe. That would be even better.
Rate, review us, and thank you for listening.
Yeah. So, bye and see you next time.
Bye.
We'll probably not see you.
Well, you'll hear us next time.